I understand why this car sells, this car doesn't sell. I understand why a small 29,000 Cadillac cannot sell. No, I understand why, because it's off-code. It's absolutely crucial to understand what I call the reptilian hot button. My theory is very simple. The reptilian always win. I don't care what you're going to tell me intellectually, give me the reptilian.
Welcome, friends. This is Red Eyes Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and it is a pleasure to have you with us today. We are coming to you from Sweden in Scandinavia, but you can reach us worldwide through our website, redeyescreations.com. Take a look at our Twitter feed, YouTube channels, and RSS and podcast feeds. They're all on the website, so you can follow us at your convenience. And please check out our recent programs with MEP Nigel Farage, member of the European Parliament, and the follow-up show we did with David Icke on the topic of the European Union and the massive corruption and kind of cover-up at the same time that is taking place within the EU that shows that it's pretty much built on lies, deceit, and fraud. The EU Commission and the elite Eurocrats are trying to create another super state, and this is going to be done through the Lisbon Treaty. So please check out these two programs. They're available right now on our website. Spread them as far and wide as you can. It's a very important subject. And we have upcoming programs on the same issue. MEP Martha Andreasen on her book Brussels Laid Bare. The guys from We Are Change Ireland are going to join us. And maybe we're going to have the guys from truthcoalitionireland.org with us as well, if we can arrange getting them on the show. Okay, hopefully you are comfortable wherever you are, in front of the computer, maybe in your car, on your couch, or taking a walk with your iPod or MP3 player. Today we have Dominic Orbach with us on the program to talk about reptilian marketing versus the heart-brain model. We are going to kind of break down these terms for you if you're not familiar with them. We're going to begin to talk about the negative effects of reptilian marketing and then move on to the countermeasure, so to speak, to this tactic and talk about the positive effects of the heart-brain model. The website you can take a look at is heartbrain.net. And there's a lot of good information up there for you, so do check it out. With that, welcome to the program, Dominic Orbach. Very nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Henrik.
It's good to have you here, and it's going to be a really interesting program. We have a lot of interesting things to go through, and I think a new subject matter for a lot of people as well that might have heard about reptilian marketing or not, depending on if they've been following my website and so forth. But before we dive into the main subjects, your new voice, so to speak, on this program, and it would be good to just to get a little bit of background on yourself. I want to ask you when you first started your website and how you got into this area of this specific material, Dominic.
Yes, actually, it originated when people approached me from outside of the marketing realm and asked me to basically market some of their channeled or transcribed materials. So I didn't know how to do that, but I had been learning a lot about the heart from a spiritual perspective, but also a scientific perspective by reading books by Joseph Chilton Pierce, who referenced the HeartMath Institute. And then I also heard Dr. Rappe, who is featured on the PBS Persuaders interview, talked to my company that I was working with at the time about reptilian marketing. He was on book tour. So with that, I came up with the idea of heart-brain media. And so I'm a marketer by professional background, but I'm also delving into a little bit of publishing. So that's... the confusion on the website might stem from that. It's like, is this a publishing or is this a service company? Mm. I believe even you had that confusion.
That's right. That's right. So when did you start up the website? A few years ago, or have you just been running it for shorter than that?
Yeah, it's about 2 years ago. Probably a few months after I heard Rappe speak, and it's just been a hobby since then. And so, really, I'm transitioning into from a corporate marketer to a small business owner.
And maybe we can talk a little bit about Rappe then, Clotaire Rappe, the Frenchman now living in the United States, I think. And for what would you preface in regards to him? Don't know how much you've been studying him and so forth, but maybe you have more information than I do on the guy. I have this video pretty much up on the website, which explains a little bit of where he comes from, so to speak, and what he considers to be, how you market something successfully to a wider audience, so to speak. But what would you like to say about Repai before we begin here?
Well, it was very challenging to come up with something to say he was wrong. It's basically hard to say he's wrong because of the very successful recipe that he advocates. It works. It gets results, and it works. So I took the language of innovation and sustainability to say, it may work, but there is certainly an element of error in what he is advocating. And so the language of innovation and sustainability is how I would counter what he claims is a success. So in that sense, it doesn't work. It is wrong.
Are you saying, Dominic, that it's something that works in the short term, so to speak, but what you're talking about is in the long term, right?
Yeah, short and long term. I think Hillary Clinton is a good example of it working, not working in the short term. In the political arena, it's fascinating to watch in politics, and especially communication. I think one misnomer is that he's a marketing expert. People claim that he's marketing. In his interview, in his own words, he pretty much says this. He says, it's absolutely crucial for anybody in communication. And that could be journalists, TV, media, all of it. Or marketing people. So I think this is part of the confusion around marketing. It's a wide and huge field of work.
Mm-hmm.
So most people associate marketing with bullshit artists or email. There's a lot of confusion around what it is because there's just so many aspects to it. But when it comes to reptilian marketing, I think it rests squarely in the field of communication.
Hmm. So explain a little bit for us and for those people who don't know, what is reptilian marketing and what how would you describe that?
Well, I think with your audience, the tendency might be to go to the occult references, reptiles and whatnot. I don't know. But it's the hot button of the base of your brain, the R brain. So there's a theory out there in communications that segments the brain into three sections. The R brain, which is nicknamed the reptilian brain, because even reptiles, the most basic animals, have this R brain of survival, reproduction, fight or flight, sex and death,
yes.
That kind of stuff.
Yes.
It also deals with automatic responses, very unconscious things like breathing. When you're breathing at night, you're asleep, your R brain is still working, making sure you breathe, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other section is the limbic, which is associated with emotions, and then the cortex, which is associated with intellect and thinking and rational. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely, and I guess what you're saying here in one way is that this is a marketing then that is targeting the base core, so to speak, of your mind, brain, and consciousness pretty much, and it does not kind of apply, or rather, I'd say it actually tries to bypass the rational process and go straight to the emotional core of yourself. Don't know if you would agree with that or not.
Yeah, and that's where there's a gray area because, of course, you want an emotionally visceral response. You do want to appeal to emotion, but to say that appealing to the R brain is emotionally visceral is kind of misleading.
Hmm. And what would you say to be a better explanation for that?
It's not appealing to emotion. It's appealing to fight or flight reactions. So you're speaking to unconscious things that deal with the behavioral sciences, like reproductions, you know, sex, death, fight, flight, those types of, and that's when it becomes very unconscious.
Yes.
Unconscious. So on the whole, that's why the heart-brain model simply leverages existing scientific facts now, proven by science. And that's where authors introduced places like the HeartMath Institute, which I'm a fan of because mm-hmm. A lot of their work establishes that fact that I just claimed, that there is a literal neurological connection between your heart and your mind, and that specifically rests, I think, in the frontal lobe.
Interesting.
And so, sorry to interrupt, but that's why I call it the heart brain, because it's basically a fourth brain. It's not a triune brain model. So what Rappe is espousing is based on a completely outdated model. So that's, going back to what I said, he's an error. That's where the error starts. They're just basically talking about the brain incorrectly at this point.
So I guess it's also tricky then, as you said at the beginning here, to kind of prove it wrong in one sense, because just as you said, on one level, it is actually working, because it targets the fear, the fight and flight part of us, so to speak. And why do you think it is working then, if the model overall is wrong?
Well, for one, the science is new. So, and then two, it's all about profit. It's about winning in that sense. So winning, whether it's selling products or passing policy or convincing people about anything really, if the theory behind it and the practice and the strategy, the school of thought is all about reptilian hot buttons and this is the recipe for success, well, you're damaging culture. You're damaging, you know, people. It's really, you know, marketing at the end of the day is about your will, your free will, your ability to make decisions, and your perception, and that's, you know, your perception of reality.
I see. And what Rappe is doing at this point is, of course, he comes up with something that he calls the code, pretty much, and sells it to these big corporations that are more than happy to, you know, bung up a lot of money to actually get a marketing tool, so to speak, to get to this reptilian hot button, as it's called. I don't know, have you studied that at all in regards to the code or even what, like, type of companies that are buying this? Are you aware of that at all?
Just by observation, you know, in that sense, you can look at how he brands himself. You know, and it's very luxury oriented, big business oriented, materialistic oriented. You know, and that's not a personal attack. It's just,
of course, yeah.
You know, it's a lot of marketing has to do with success. When people are trying to market themselves or a system, or a technique. You know, look how successful this is. Look at my cars. Look at my castle. So in that sense, it's not a critique. It's right there in front of you. That's how he presents himself.
Yes. So what would you say in regards to, if you look at it from the point of view of, you know, okay, we know that this goes on in marketing, you know, in the way they try to sell products to us, but you mentioned a little bit about politics as well and communications. You mentioned Hillary Clinton, for instance. Maybe you can... if you have some more input on that, tell us a bit more about that. Have you seen that this way of marketing a political message, for instance, has been used as well?
Yeah, first, it's pretty rampant. I mean, reptilian marketing is absolutely rampant in politics. We're dumbed down to the point where everything's coded in reptilian marketing, so to speak, you know, the state as protector of your security.
Yes.
Right there is one thing. I have a politics background from college, so I know that's helped me in coming up with the model. So I guess we'll start, you know, mushroom clouds. If you don't elect me, we're going to be attacked. You know, these are very clear and obvious examples.
Yes.
The Hillary Clinton one, I would say, is that when she was losing in the polls, it became more and more dire. You know, she started making statements, and that's why she was accused of, say, taking Republican talking points. Republican is the opposite of the Democrat that she was running on. So the more and more she went to reptilian hot buttons, the more she was criticized within her own party and constituents who were more receptive to, you know, Obama's rhetoric.
Do you think Obama's is different? He's not using reptilian marketing at all?
I don't know for sure. I think he made a concerted effort not to go there. And in at least claiming that he made a concerted effort, I think he was successful. And it doesn't help that there was a huge wave of dissatisfaction with Bush. Who knows if the outgoing president was neutral and nobody really was dissatisfied, who knows how effectual it would have been.
Yeah.
But it certainly was effectual. I was happy to see him take that approach. And for the most part, I think he was new, or in that he was successful doing it.
Do you think then that also reflects or shows that people are kind of sick of the fear-mongering, that the targeting, again, of the reptilian hot button? Because that's what it is. The question, I guess, is that, is that still just another level of it, I guess? Is it another level of still targeting the base core within ourselves, another type of fear mode, because we're sick and tired of it and we want to have a new message, and we still want to be, so to speak, promised to get change or get something new? I don't know. At least I can see that it's still very, it's still targeting the emotional part, at least. But I don't know how, if you would agree with that or not.
Well, I do agree, but I guess I agree in the esoteric sense. I hear you use that word a lot, right?
Yes.
And your audience is very curious and truth-seeking about these things. And I would say, on an esoteric level, absolutely people are sick of it.
Yeah.
Something's going on, you know. In that sense, there is fields, universe fields and universe circuits literally helping us evolve. And part of that is a dissatisfaction with these outmoded reptilian tactics. Now, that's not to say that they're still not working, because I think by observation, they're being ramped up. They're in overdrive.
Yes. What are, maybe you can take some, do you have any examples of that, how the way you see that spreading in society? I can right away think about the swine flu hoax, pretty much, that it is at this point. And the fact that they're trying to scare us into going and taking the vaccinations, et cetera. That's one way I see. Would you agree with that, or do you have some other example that you can tell us?
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. And that's maybe we should just reread that quote again. That's back to my point about Rappé not being relevant to the overall field of marketing, but rather communication,
yes,
which is probably a subfield within marketing. But, when he's speaking about the reptilian hot button, it's absolutely being applied by journalists, TV, and media.
Yeah. And he has this idea, he says, the reptilian will always win, I think he says, or something like that, that it doesn't matter how much you try or whatever way you try around it. He says, everything I care about is the reptilian. Give me the reptilian, right?
Yeah. Give me the reptilian. I don't care what you think intellectually, because the reptilian always wins. And that's where it becomes kind of exciting, because I think that's where he's totally dead wrong.
Mm.
When you incorporate things like game theory, totally dead wrong. And so when it comes to sustainability and maybe innovation for that matter, but certainly sustainability, when looked at through game theory, which is a very simple model.
Tell us a bit about that for the audience. and including me in this case, who doesn't know about so much about game theory.
Sure. Well, there's a couple ways to approach it. There's other nicknames like prisoner's dilemma, you know, scenarios where police interrogate two prisoners and say, you better cooperate or you're going to get screwed because the other guy we have is going to rat you out. Mm. And so you're in a dilemma of do I cooperate or not. The other ways are scientific modeling of artificial environments where you have, agents directed to either cooperate or not cooperate in their environment. And so you can look at it through like point systems, or you can look at it through win-loss. You can look at it through procreation, but the bottom line is I like to look at it in win-loss scenarios because that's the simplest. So it's probably better to have a visual, but you have a win-loss quadrant, and so you have four basic outcomes. You have a win-win scenario, you have a win-loss, you have a loss-win, and you have a loss-loss. So from game theory, usually they put some weighted points on there. So if you have a win-win scenario, both of you are going to get 2 points. But if you have a win-loss scenario, the winner gets 3, the loser gets 1. And so that's where I think Rappe is with reptilian brain hot buttons. Hmm. It's a, we're going to sell our product, we're going to sell our policy, screw you guys. Hmm. He's screwing you.
Yeah.
Because in the end, he's going to win, and that's all that matters. The reason I mentioned artificial environments and testing this kind of scenario is that when you take that attitude, inherently, the environment leads to loss-loss. So you end up in wars, you end up with pollution, you end up with, a bad outcome. Now, that's where I get very conservative in the critique, because that's in the long run, you get bad outcomes. In the short term, who cares? You've sold your product.
Yeah.
You sold your PT Cruiser. After a few years, let's reevaluate the PT Cruiser. I don't think it's considered a success in the market. Hmm. Sure, they sold enough cars in the short term, but, did it save Chrysler? No.
I see what you mean. And exactly. It works on one level in the short term, but as you say, in the long term, it actually won't do it. And I mean, if we talk about responsibility in regards to us, then the receivers of this marketing, how can we not be manipulated by this? What do you think is the key to not become dragged in and have our reptilian hot buttons pushed, so to speak?
Well, it's going to take some time. I have a casual observation that, certainly in my country with politics, there's, I think the older generations are more susceptible. Certainly there's the generation, the Vietnam generation who wanted something better. But in general, and I speak from personal experience, like my mother, for example, says Obama took my TV away, or Obama's this and that, the government's this and that. And in general, the older generation is susceptible to these hot buttons. And I think there's a window of opportunity for younger generations to be educated about this. And maybe they're curious, and this is why the internet's such a good place.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you, why do you think the older generation is more susceptible to this? Do you think it has to do with the authority and the fact that we hand over responsibility to someone else, to a leader? Someone should take care of us when we don't have individual responsibility there? Or what do you think is the reason for that?
Well, I can't answer that comprehensively because I think there's too many perspectives that add up to a tidal wave of what we're talking about. And, but I would point people to, what Michael Tesserion has to say.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that there's that expression, be wise as the serpent, gentle as the dove, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some sense, that's what I mean by the older generation. It's hard to, there's not a lot of truth seekers out there inherently.
Like, that's right. That's right.
Maybe not a lot that have an inherent drive to constantly delve deeper and not take everyone's word at face value or systems or, you know, hey, the reptilian hot button always wins. And by the end of the hour, everybody's giving him a standing ovation. You know, not that that's bad, but who's going to leave that room thinking, you know what, something didn't sit well with me in what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really, I could answer that, you know, esoterically, so to speak.
Yeah.
I think a lot of your guests have it nailed down. You know, the reason there's hope is because of, you know, some of the insights by Neil Kramer. I loved hearing the end of the fourth age.
Yes.
I used to study crop circles myself in college, and I was thwarted at every opportunity. I tried to study it. No, no, what are you trying to study that for?
Really? So, yeah, there you go.
I don't know. I think I've kind of diverged there. I don't really have a silver bullet answer.
Sure.
But
sure.
I think everything's in flux. I think this whole shift, there's a lot of synonyms for what we're discussing, a lot of synonyms. And so I urge people just to have an open mind and keep searching. Absolutely. And they'll connect the dots.
What more can we say about it in regards to, I mean, you mentioned, for instance, innovation and sustainability and so forth. What more can you say in regards to, like, sustainability? What do you encompass in that term, if we think about it from the perspective of reptilian marketing that is not sustainable? Tell us a bit more what you mean about that.
Sure. My insight or my observation is that there's two types of communications when it comes to innovation. And so you could say that some people are talking the talk but not walking the walk. And this is where you get into a lot of the work around memes. And memes is, a marketing jargon word for slogans. So whose slogan is going to win? And so memes, reptilian memes, are the recipe for winning. And so with sustainability and going back to game theory, reptilian marketing, you know, I can hopefully educate the audience to look into the memes. And so one of my missions is to get people to start asking, well, how is marketing addressing the heart brain? And it's pretty much that simple.
Yeah.
Or that complex, I don't know. But if they understand that these memes are based on an accurate model or an accurate theory of reality or the brain or the mind, they have a right to push back, ask questions.
Yes.
You know, and so in that sense, it's quite, you know, it's empowering, or it's positive, it's assertive, and it's not critical.
That's
in a sense that you're damning these people.
And in what way do you think that happens? The way people are being damaged, so to speak.
Well, there is that division. So there is you get inherent division. People are passionate about their values, and what they consider to be, you know, critical. State, you know, certainly security is a big issue.
Yes.
But they do not look behind things like the budget, for example. You know, that's where you get the impression that people aren't really political. They're not they're not policy wonks. They don't really care about the details. You know, it's too much work to understand it all, and it really is. So you have to talk on a values. You have to talk about values. And so...
Yeah, what I wanted to intervene there or comment on, I guess, is in regards to slogans, what you mentioned about, for instance, for me, that is to simplify all the time. In one way, it also ends up being the use of empty terms. And again, if I go back to the Obama, what he won on, so to speak, is the terms of like change and yes, we can. They don't really mean anything. There's nothing really there. But actually, it opens it up so people can interpret that in whatever way they can. And to me, that stems from the same kind of think, if you will. It's to simplify. Don't make it too complicated. Make it very slogan-esque. It's more, as you say, it ends up back in the realm of marketing again. That's what the way I feel about it. How about you, Dominic?
Yeah, I would agree. And there's kind of a second tier to that, I think you touched upon, in that the memes and the slogans, and in marketing, it's called a value proposition. Mm-hmm. So here's my value and here's my proposition to you to get you to buy into what I'm selling or creating. And the kind of a second tier of memes that don't on the surface seem reptilian but are things like freedom. And so you get these massive schisms on two views of what freedom is, or just an accusation by one generation or one political party or one group against another, where they sense that there's a, you're against my values. You don't understand what's really important. I know the meaning of freedom. I know the meaning of security. And those are the second tier hot buttons, because it's especially true in marketing, where I see value propositions of freedom and abundance. Abundance is a huge one out there right now, just like, say, sustainability is a huge one.
Mm-hmm.
But abundance, I've got a beef with the way abundance is messaged. In some sense, it's unethical.
Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, when... In some sense, there's a wave about ethical marketing, for example. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So how do you do ethical marketing? Well, from what I've seen out there, people talking about ethical marketing, they don't have a model. They just have they value ethics, but they just sell you the same service.
Yes.
Nothing against that, but there's no real thought leadership or insight as to what that is.
Right, right.
Whereas abundance very clearly tries to tell you what it is. And it's a thinking and being happy. You can think your way into abundance. But the systems behind that are not necessarily ethical, because they just get you to buy into this guru system, or worse, like multi-level marketing. And those are just pyramid schemes, and so for your audience,
yes,
they know quite well, pyramids and hierarchies.
Yes.
And so these are the value propositions and memes of the hierarchy, in a sense, in telling you false propositions of freedom.
Hmm.
I mean, the people who are in these schemes, because that's what they are, it's a Ponzi scheme.
Yes.
And they... people have about as much success as a person picking up a basketball and thinking they're going to be a professional athlete. The success rates are very, very low, and they don't tell you that. They just tell you, do you want to be a winner? Then you need to do this, and you turn into a person who is like that guy at the bar who wants to hit on every girl, and he's just going to keep swinging until he gets contact.
So would you also say, because again, you I guess you've studied marketing also, and is that the way, is that the message, so to speak, that is being portrayed if one goes to study marketing, or do you think is it more sophisticated than that? You mentioned like multi-level marketing, for instance. Does it go deeper than that?
I think it might. Again, you got to look at the people pitching the systems, and generally, by that time, you really have a kind of a cult of thought, because certainly the people at the top are constantly reinforcing the memes and the messages.
Yes, absolutely.
And really, they don't. And once you either buy into it and help them, or you fail, in which case they really have nothing to do with you. But you go into it through all sorts of reasons. And in that sense, Repay is absolutely right. People don't go into those kind of schemes thinking rationally at all.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too much into it, but that's just a second level. You know, abundance is certainly a huge impact in the internet and marketing and business. They market it as a business or a way of thought. And it's basically unfair because we see the world collapsing around us, these artificial bubbles, people not regulating the market, just massive abuse and corruption.
Yes.
But how are we gonna correct that? Oh, we're gonna think and grow rich. This is not a citizen. That's where it delves into politics again. I just personally don't like being marketed to and talked to as a consumer.
Yeah.
I'm a citizen.
Yeah.
Those types of differences.
It's a good point. And you know, one thing maybe we can talk a little more about is the schism that you mentioned before as well. One tactic that seems to be is to put up, well, pretty much two opponents. That's the way the game is being played, so to speak, playing two sides against each other, because to me that seems to draw more people into it. You have Coke versus Pepsi, or, you know, again, you have Obama versus, who was the other guy, McCain, or, you know, it feels to me that it's, again, very, very simplified. And it sends that message, whose side are you on? You know, it's time to pick and choose a side here. And we're never really kind of given a third option, if you know what I mean.
Sure. I'll start by backtracking just one more point I had to make before, that there really are some damages to the type of meme marketing, in that it creates a lot of internet spam. And those are real rubber hits the road marketing malpractices.
Yeah.
So spam of email and spam of websites that really lead you down a road to nowhere.
Yeah.
They have nothing to offer.
Right.
Anyway, but to answer your question there, it was about the fragmentation, right?
Yeah, exactly. The schism that is taking place and these two sides that are constantly being played against each other.
Yeah. And that's where my only insight there is to, you know, I think your audience knows about this fragmentation on many levels, but I think what maybe some new stuff I could add is to say that at least an answer to that is saying, well, we are all one. It's all good. And then, so I have my own opinions about what that is, the correct or true and good way, versus the co-opters. So it's like, you know, if the reptilian's not going to work, what else will work? Okay, this abundance will work. This play on unity. But is it really truly you know, is the intention to unify, or is it just to do a smokescreen for consolidation of control? And I think that's relevant. You know, I think your audience would understand what I'm talking about there, but not necessarily anyone off the street.
I see what you mean, and the play on it's an interesting the way you describe that play on unity. It's the promise of oneness, where you have, for instance, from my point of view, what you can see right now, we have, for instance, there's a film out there which is I think free for download, and you know, you can, it's being played in the movie theaters or what have you. It's called Home, and it's pretty much, from my point of view, playing into the whole environmental propaganda that is running side by side here with us now as well. And that shows a lot of corporations are behind sponsoring this film, pretty much, and the production of it. It's a very beautiful shot film. It's a nice production, all that. Tons of money probably went into making it. It's called Home, again, for those who want to check it out online. But to me, that also sends that message from these companies that are involved in it, that we do care. We do care about the environment. We want to send that message as a kind of marketing scheme as well to people who are watching that. You can see the, you know, the big brand names flashing by in the beginning of the film. Do you think that that's a part of this as well, that they want to give, at this point in time, they want to give out the promise, so to speak, to the consumers that, yes, we're on your side. We care about the environment. We care about the earth. But the question is, do they really, or is that another marketing scheme just to get people to continue buying their products? I don't know if you've been if you're aware of this, or if you've been paying attention to this at all, Dominic.
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, you have your, that's where marketing gets a bad rep, because you have the squad, the corporate squad saying, hey, we've pulled the people, we've done our focus groups, we've seen the research, and this is what people care about. So if we just pitch it in this sense, you know, we'll get our message and products and policies through. So in that sense, it's very, you can almost, you know, you can predict it easily.
Hmm.
And so you end up in this other, you know, another cycle of, well, that was wrong, these guys are bastards. So to that effect, I run across people who just make assumptions that I'm a bastard
right.
in marketing. You're a bullshit artist, kind of, you know.
You know, you mentioned one term that is interesting. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that. Focus groups, the importance of psychology as well in marketing. I'm reminded of, for instance, a guy called Frank Luntz. Don't know if you're familiar with him. He wrote a book called Words That Work, and it's also about perception pretty much and how you can change certain terms. He, for instance, he's been working a lot under the Bush administration. Don't know if he's doing any currently under the Obama one, but for instance, he changed certain terms to make them cling in a more positive way. For instance, he changed oil drilling to, I think it was like energy exploration or something like that. Have you heard about Frank Luntz?
Yeah, in that, in as much as he is also featured in the Persuaders series.
Yes, exactly.
That Rapea.
Yes.
And so it's a safe assumption just to understand that there are, you know, thousands probably of Frank Luntz's out there. You know, everybody has, you know, like having a court. If you're going to run for office, you better have a few Frank Luntzes.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, on your team. Every politician running for office has to have one. So in that sense, yeah, I mean, it's just pervasive. I make an assumption that it's pervasive.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I think you're right there. What's the role, if we talk about a focus group again, or not the role maybe, but what's the purpose of a focus group? What can be found out when you drag, you know, X amount of people into a room pretty much and try to get to the deepest cores of their, you know, psychology in order to I don't know if all the focus groups are being handled in that way, but that was some of the way we got to see it in The Persuaders and some of the other films as well. But what's your take on the focus group? What can be understood when a focus group is being done?
Well, I have to do the caveat that I really don't know. I don't have a lot of experience with focus groups or running them. So I basically have a more informed but equal opinion
mm-hmm.
as anybody else. And that's, you know, it's some of it's some got to be true, but a lot of it's just going through the motions, I think. My opinion is they're just going through the motions. And in that sense, it's going through the motions so that the client thinks there was value and methodology behind, you know, the basic recipe of reptilian marketing.
Yes.
You know, at the end of the day, they're just trying to crack the code to pitch the reptilian response in the most threatening manner. And so the trend today, as we see human beings becoming immune to this or desiring a better way, they're learning to spin.
Yes.
So it's really about, they're really just testing spin and how it's going to land. So they've already got, my assumption is that they've already got the concept in their head and they're not discovering anything. I don't think Rapace is honestly discovering these things. He just, as a marketer, that's what's fun about marketing. You get to make outrageous claims. You know? But, you know, but focus groups are, I don't think they're that relevant anymore. There's a lot of other ways to go about
it. Yeah. Well, and I guess you have that tie-in as well for people who might want to check out The Persuaders, which is, you can watch for free, by the way, on the PBS website. I can link that up so people can take a look at that again, because that really shows and give a good idea and some of the background here that we've been talking about as well. But, you know, if we, for instance, talk about Well, yeah, sorry, to just finish up that train of thought. The idea that people are becoming smarter as well, so to speak. People are becoming savvy to the fact that this is the way marketing is being run, and they're searching for something else. They're searching for a new type of way. So the marketers have to be up on the ball all the time and become smarter to deliver that same message to all the time. So it's kind of like a, you know, bacteria antibody type, you know, fighting going on here, so to speak. But one thing I wanted to ask you about here as well, and we can, by the way, begin to round things up here for the first hour, Dominic, is about emotional imprinting and the relationship to the mother. I don't know if you had any input or something you want to mention about that as well.
Yeah, thank you for going back there, because I think that's vital to talking about what's wrong with the theory behind reptilian marketing, and that is that it's that the mind is segmented into three components, and it's all isolated in your head. So science, it's a fact that there's a neurological connection to the heart. And so what you talked about just now is all about developmental mind development. And so when Rappe talks about reptilian imprinting or emotional imprinting, he's talking about the limbic system, the emotional part of that brain, that in between the R brain and the cortex.
Yes.
So thanks to Joseph Chilton Pierce and looking at how to raise children in the most, you know, good way possible, or true, good, and loving way, it's really not about emotional imprinting in a reptilian way at all. It's not about, oh, I'm learning how to be fed by my mother, and that's how I'm going to survive, and so that's emotionally imprinted. It's really more about developing and exercising, but developing that heart-brain circuit, that neurological heart connected to the prefrontal lobes or the frontal lobes. You know, I'm not the neuroscientist, but I know enough to know that, okay, that those facts exist. So it's not about, it's really about, you know, brain development,
mm-hmm.
heart-brain development. And to say that it's an emotional imprint is a, you know, it's wrong. And if he knows about this, it's disingenuous. So my hope is that he understands the fact of the circuit, and all these marketers change their theory. You know, like Michael Tesserion likes to say, the dark forces aren't creative. So let's see them try to co-opt this one, you know, because, you know, it'd be very hard not to. Now the tables turn.
Yes.
Let's see what they can do with this. See how they can ruin this one.
Well, what we can do then, I guess, to hear Dominic, is to in the next hour here begin to go into a little bit more about the theory that you are developing about the heart brain, the connection there. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about Joseph Chilton Pierce, the HeartMath Institute, the neurological connection between the brain and the heart, and what you see as this positive model, pretty much that you're mentioning. But before we round things up here, tell people a little bit about your website again. And do you, like, on your website, offer suggestions to people, or is this primarily the way that you're, like, trying to develop this theory and kind of make it stronger or better? Or what's the main purpose, so to speak, of the website today?
Yeah, I think the main purpose is, I guess, for the audience and to invite them for the feedback, is that, you know, this is fairly new. It's probably, you know, I won't dare to say I'm the original. I'm just an innovator. I'm coming along and doing what I can from my perspective and my experience to try to innovate and improve, you know, upon basically what Rappe is doing or anyone else. But in that sense, nobody really understands. When I put the graphic before them, for example, they go, that's nice, that's pretty, what is it? So in that sense, I do desire feedback. But on the website, there's a graphic, a slideshow on the main page. But, you know, it's the website also has, it's kind of eclectic. So it's still a work in progress. In that sense, I have my own marketing services, you know, to offer to other small businesses. And that's not on the homepage. The homepage is the more or less the evangelistic model that we're discussing. So in that sense, I'm a very fledgling leader of insight, if you will, I guess, you know, compared to your other guests. So just, you know, be merciful, but do visit the site. And certainly if anyone is truly interested in sustainability and spirituality, or as a light worker or anything of that genre, I basically would love to be their branding person, their guardian of memes and the protector. I'm not a bullshit artist. I really care about this stuff. So it's
interesting. It's a new form of in that sense marketing that you're developing. And I guess would you say that, what, according to yourself, do you consider that to be a true ethical way of doing marketing compared to these other big corporations and what Rapai is doing and whatnot?
Yeah, and in that sense, ethics it has to be changed because ethics is just undefinable, and then people get in these division things of comparing values and warring and quarreling over values. It's really about that's where sustainability, I think, can lead us to the best outcome.
Wonderful. And give us the URL again, then, so people know where to go to check out your stuff, Dominic.
Sure. If there's, you know, it relates to one, if you come away with one thing, just understand that it's not heart and brain anymore. It's not your heart and your mind winning over heart and brain, your mind. It's start saying heart brain because it's true. It's one system. So it's heartbrain.net.
Join us in our members area for much more with Dominic Orbeck as we begin to discuss the effects and the biological damages of reptilian marketing related to stress and aggression. We then talk about the heart-brain model, the Heart Math Institute, Joseph Chilton Pierce, some of his research, emotional intelligence and abundance versus lack. We also talk about ethical marketing, sustainability, truth and anger, the impact of the film Zeitgeist and anger as a kind of positive force. We also talk about parenting, the heart shield, the mind and the heart as a receiver and transmitter of a greater reality. We talk about relaxation, breathing, and also how the heart-brain circuit can be exercised. Our website is redicecreations.com. Go there and click on subscribe to sign up and get instant access to our radio archives, our films, video interviews, webcasts, and much more. Sign up for 3 months. It's only 16 eurocents per day. Right now, we'll listen to some music to finish up this hour, and then we'll be back with hour two for Red Ice members.
Down the street, you can hear her scream, you're a disgrace, and she slams the door in his drunken face. And now he stands outside, and all the neighbors start to gossip and drool. He cries, oh girl, you must be mad. What happened to the sweet love you and me had? Against the door he leans and starts a scene, and his tears fall and burn a garden green. And so castles made of sand fall in the sea eventually. An Indian brave who, before he was 10, played war games in the woods with his Indian friends. And he built a dream that when he grew up, he would be a fearless warrior, Indian chief. Many moons passed, and more the dream grew stronger, till tomorrow he would sing his first war song and fight his first battle. But something went wrong. Surprise attack killed him in his sleep that night. And so castles made of sand melts into the sea eventually. There was a young girl whose heart was a frown, cause she was crippled for life and she couldn't speak a sound, and she wished and prayed she could stop living, so she decided to die. She drew a wheelchair to the edge of the shore, and to her legs she smiled, you won't hurt me no more. But then a sight she never seen made her jump and say, look, a golden winged ship is passing my way. And it really didn't have to stop. he just kept on going. And so castles made of sand slips into the sea eventually.